Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News for Monday, February 8th, 2010. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve, that's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. My lead-in music is the first cut off of Susan Alexander's CD Sequentia called Icos, which is short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry. Sequentia is music using tones recorded from DNA vibrations. Susan recorded these tones in 1988 with the help of Dr. David Diemer, at that time a cell biologist at the Davis campus of the University of California. If any of you want to chat while we're on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. My guest today is Adrian Vermeule, who has an MSW and has been a social worker and counselor for close to 20 years, and is now using labyrinths in her practice. Thank you, Adrian, for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Christiana. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. We have gorgeous, beautiful weather here, I'm taking advantage of it. I actually sat outside and got a dose of vitamin D, which is badly needed.
We definitely need to keep that up in the Northwest. I live just outside Seattle, and we also have a beautiful day up here as well.
Great. Now, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did. It's Vermeule. It actually the way I tell people to remember it is it rhymes with turmoil. So yes, it's actually Irish. There is actually a town in right outside of Cork called Vermeule, and the L-E was added to indicate that that's where, when the immigrants were immigrating, my great-great-great-grandparents immigrated to actually Canada and then migrated down to the States from there.
Ah, it's interesting how the names, how works out, isn't it?
It really is. It's fascinating.
Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself, your background a little bit, and then, you know, sort of segue that into what led you to labyrinths and working with
them. Okay. Well, as you mentioned, I have a master's in social work, and I actually received that from the University of Washington, which is how I got to Seattle. I was actually born in Detroit, and my family moved to Southern California when I was 12. Now, it was an exciting time to move literally across the country. Unfortunately, I take after my mother's side of the family. My mother was born in England, and so her mother was English and her father was Scotch, and my father's side is all Irish. And my sister and brother had a little bit darker skin color. So when we moved to California, my skin didn't really like it a lot. It was just way too sunny for me. So I finished college in San Francisco and then moved to Seattle to pursue my master's. So I moved up here the weekend after Mount St. Helens erupted, which was quite an adventure in and of itself. And I got into social work, and I primarily worked with teenagers. And then the year after I graduated, my brother, who was only 26 at the time, unexpectedly passed away. And so I found myself dealing with my own grief. And to be quite honest, even though I had just come out of graduate school, I wasn't prepared for the aftermath of dealing with that. And so I learned a lot on my own. And then about 6 years after that, my mother suffered a brain aneurysm and was in a coma for almost 5 weeks before she passed away in 1991. So I had some really personal experience of dealing with grief and learning some good coping mechanisms and some not great coping mechanisms. Then in 1999, the man that I lived with for over 20 years, he and I, our relationship ended, and I found myself in October of 1999 sitting on the couch one night just in so much pain. The only thing that I could do was to write "This Too Shall Pass, This Too Shall Pass," because I hadn't yet found the labyrinth. So in February of 2000, I actually took a trip to Paris with a friend of mine, and she was acquainted with labyrinths, and one of the things on her list of things to do was to go visit the Chartres Cathedral. Unfortunately, as Nancy Kloss had mentioned last week in her talk, there's usually chairs up, and it's difficult to find time to actually walk the labyrinth, but like her, I really felt something, knowing that millions of footsteps had been taken on that path. So when I came back home, I started working with labyrinths and really kind of finding my own way. And so what I had heard that really started me on the journey of connecting the journey of grief and a labyrinth journey was the only way out is through. And you'll hear that really referenced a lot when you're talking about labyrinths, because you walk in, it's a universal path, meaning there's only one way in and out. And that's what I had really discovered about grief, is that if you don't walk through it, if you really don't go through it and feel your feelings and really deal with it, untended grief comes back really to haunt us. And one of the things that I do want to emphasize is that even though I got kind of through this and this my initial experience with grief through death, I really define grief as occurring any time a person experiences the loss of something that they care about. So last year in 2008, I actually, the company that I worked for 8 years, was no more. So I found myself out of my primary position of a job. And I went through tremendous amounts of grief around that. I really liked what I did. I liked the people that I worked with. So once again, I just want to make it really clear that grief can occur over the loss of anything. And so what I discovered in kind of walking my own path, so to speak, both on the labyrinth and through grief and working with other people, is that by using the labyrinth as a metaphor for the journey of grief, people are actually able to understand what they're going through a lot easier. And that's really what I see my job is really helping people understand that grieving is a part of life. And in our culture especially, we're grief-phobic. A lot of people are. It's very difficult for people to talk about and confront those feelings because for so many of us, it's overwhelming because we haven't dealt with all the things that have happened to us along the way. And so when you start to open up in the door and talking about grief and loss, what happens is that you tend to rip the kind of the scabs off of other experiences that people have had, and they get overwhelmed. So what I focus on in terms of the labyrinth is that this is really a way to visualize kind of your journey through grief, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you primarily only see clients for grief issues?
No, I really work with people in a variety of situations. So this is a particular focus of mine and the interests of mine, and people that know me and that refer people, that's probably the biggest area that I get referrals from, because it is difficult to find people who can really talk about this in a way that doesn't scare people or that you can take it on. And so what I find is that just in conversations with everybody in all walks of life, separate from my work life, when I start talking about grief, it's amazing how much people want to open up about it. And so that's kind of the idea of having something to give concrete to give people. And that's why really, I focus on actually giving people finger labyrinths to walk. So just having the, I really like the Chartres Cathedral design. It's a beautiful design, and with the rose pattern in the middle typically. And so I give people a copy of that and explain, if they don't know how to use it, explain how to use that and how to walk it and have them keep kind of a journal of what happens on their walks. Because what happens is when grief strikes and things come up, you're maybe not being able to go outside and actually walk a labyrinth. And so by having something that they can walk with their finger, which actually has been shown to have the same benefits in terms of the meditative effects and the emotional effects of walking a labyrinth with your feet, they can access whenever that happens. And that's one of the things that I really like about the labyrinth, is it is so versatile.
So when you first started, so you were walking labyrinths, and when did it dawn on you that this would be a really good tool for your practice? I mean, was this something that was automatic, or was something?
No, it actually was a process that happened. I was actually in the process of creating a book about the journey through grief, and I had a really strong sense of it being not only giving people the sense that they weren't alone and that they weren't going crazy, because what happens is when you're grieving, your emotions and everything just gets out of kilter. For example, one of the things that I found is that the part of the brain that controls chewing is actually separate from the brain that controls swallowing, the part of the brain that controls swallowing. And this was my experience, and in talking to other people, I've had it confirmed over and over again. Oftentimes, people lose their appetite. And I used to think it was just because food didn't appeal to me, but what I've realized is that the mechanism to chew food takes up a lot of energy in your brain. Well, when you're grieving, that part of your brain, your brain is trying to cope with all of these different feelings and emotions, that it just isn't there. So whenever I find out somebody is actively grieving, one of the first things I tell them is ask them, are they having trouble eating? And then I recommend that they do smoothies, they do, protein drinks. There's all kinds of substitutes for that so that they can keep up their nutrition, because grieving is very difficult on not only the emotional part of us, but also on our body. It literally drains our body of energy. And so keeping oneself nourished physically is really as important as it is emotionally. So my idea for the book, which as I began working with labyrinths more myself personally and really seeing the metaphor come true. And I think that one of the things that really struck me was when you're walking a labyrinth and you're first in it, you're really close to the center. And so you think, okay, if I just, depending on how many circuits it is, I'm probably getting pretty close. And then you make a turn and all of a sudden you find yourself on the other side of the center. You're nowhere near where you were. Well, that's what happens in grief. You're going along and you think you're doing okay, and then all of a sudden a memory or something gets triggered and you find yourself, like, as I put it, a tidal wave of grief overcomes you. And so now you've kind of lost your way again. And that's why having this defined path of going to the center of the labyrinth and walking back and forth and doing that really helps the journey of going through grief. The other thing that I, in doing work and more research on labyrinths, is that it actually helps balance the brain. And so that's another way that people can take active control of their process, their grieving process, by walking the labyrinth, is it really does help them, give them some idea that they are having some control over something. And so all of that really came together for me and really was such a clear, perfect marriage of the two. And then, as I said, giving people something concrete, a concrete journey, a concrete image of explaining kind of the grief process and using the labyrinth has just really, really worked and been a wonderful, wonderful metaphor, and has really done a lot of people really a lot. It's given them a real nice tool for them to hang on to so they can process their journey.
Well, I love what you said about going to the center and all of a sudden being walking the path and being close to the center and all of a sudden being thrown out to the outer edge. And I would imagine that for people, especially in this phobic, grief-phobic culture that we live in, where people find it very hard to be around people who are grieving, to be around family members who are grieving. It's almost a fear like they're going to catch it too. It's like a flu bug or something, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so here you have people walking something and having a visual, a very visual metaphor for the fact that even if they're in the just bawling their heads off, and then the minute before they felt that they were fine, that there's nothing wrong, that they're still connected, that they're still a part of, and it's just another part of the process. And I think that's very powerful for people to see that and physically experience that when they're walking the labyrinth. So I love that what you were saying about that, because I can imagine how beneficial it is for people who are grieving, because it most of the time people who are grieving, everybody's worried, oh, they're depressed, or maybe they should be on drugs, something's wrong. That's what they keep getting shoved in their faces, where there's nothing wrong. When you're walking the labyrinth, there's no bad way, there's no wrong way, and it's all part of the process. And maybe it really does help on a gut level for these people.
Everything that you just said was beautifully said, and that's exactly it. We people in our society are uncomfortable with people's strong emotions of any kind, but especially grief and especially loss. And so many people are afraid of saying the wrong thing that they just isolate themselves and they don't say anything. This is the time when people need other people. And so rather than being afraid of saying the wrong thing and withdrawing, if you're afraid of saying the wrong thing, just show up and be present for that person. And like you said, that's the other powerful thing about the labyrinth, is you can have multiple people walk a labyrinth, and each one of them is going to have their own experience. And that's the other thing that I really focus on in terms of using this with grief. My sister and I both lost a brother, but because our relationship was different with him, and my sister, my nieces were very young then, so not only did she have to deal with her grief, but she also had to try and explain to them. Our journeys were very different. It doesn't mean that one was right or one was wrong, but just like in a labyrinth, you can walk with people. You can be sharing the labyrinth with a multitude of people, but each person's going to have their own journey. And as to what you said, is that's exactly it, is that people can understand easier then, okay, I'm having this experience of grief. Just because somebody else isn't having it the same way doesn't mean they love that person less. It doesn't mean that they weren't affected by it. It's just that they cope with it differently. Their experience is going to be different because of all kinds of different factors. If you can explain that along with having them have the experience of walking a labyrinth and talk to other people afterwards and realize that all those experiences are valid, they're just different, then it goes a long way to helping people cope with other people's grief.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned earlier that one of the things you do, one of the ways you use labyrinth in a client's healing process is a finger labyrinth. What parameters do you use to decide when the appropriate time is to introduce the topic of a labyrinth to a client or not, or what to suggest? I mean, do you suggest that the client go to labyrinths? Do you have a list of them in your area? How do you work that? How do you do that?
It really is individual for each client. I always mention about Labyrinth, and then I talk about it as a tool. Typically speaking, I will generally give people a copy of the finger labyrinth and say, this is something that you can have with you, and we talk about what it is if they don't know. We talk about it from a meditation point of view, from a like I said earlier, the left and right brain. It really does help to balance that and the power of that. Depending on where they are, if there are outdoor labyrinths or labyrinths that they can walk, I always recommend that they do that. But the beauty of having the finger labyrinth is, as I said, I found myself sitting on the couch at 2 a.m. before I knew about labyrinths, writing, you know, this too shall pass as a way to give myself, my brain, something to do just to get through that dark night of the soul. And so that's where I see the beauty of it. So it really is depending on the circumstances and if they feel comfortable doing that. Most people are very comfortable using the finger labyrinth. And if they get into it, then they, natural curiosity then usually propels them to find a labyrinth. And I always talk about keeping track of the journey, of keeping a journal and walking with the journal and either stopping in the middle or stopping anywhere on the path and writing down their experience. One of the things that you said, Christiana, that I really want to talk about, because this has been my experience, is there is no right or wrong way to walk a labyrinth. And you can't get lost in the labyrinth. However, you can get turned around. And this is something that happened to me at the one and only Lauren Artress event that I was at, which actually was in Grace Cathedral or Grace Memorial down in Portland. And I found myself, after being at the center, walking back to the center. I somehow got turned around. And so I had to make a decision of what I was going to do. So I decided that I would walk back to the center and walk out of the labyrinth from there rather than going all the way back out. And it felt really like I was doing something kind of radical, but we had just had a conversation before our walk about there really is no wrong way. So after we had our walk, we went back in, and Lauren asked for people to share their experiences, and nobody was raising their hand right away. So I sheepishly raised my hand and kind of explained what I had done and what I had found myself in. And to my surprise, I was not the only one in that room that had done that. And the woman that spoke after me had said that she just turned to the person behind her and said, "Are you going in or are you going out?" And so there's once again, that just made me realize again just what a perfect metaphor it is for the grief journey, because no matter how you do it, it isn't wrong, and it is your experience, and you have to go through it. And so whatever ways that you can use to get through it in as healthy a way as possible, I just want to encourage people to do that.
So what has been some of the responses and stories of your clients walking? You know, can you share with us a few of the comments or the shifts that maybe have occurred?
I think probably one of the most dramatic ones was a woman who did know about labyrinths, and so she and her mother did not see eye to eye on religion. She did not practice. The daughter had not been practicing the religion that she grew up with, and that was a bone of contention with her family. And so one day when she was walking the labyrinth, consciously thinking about her mother, she realized that she felt her mother's presence with her. So when she walked and got to the center, while she sat at the center and wrote, she actually wrote a letter to her mother explaining why she no longer was following that childhood religion and what she had found on her journey, on her spiritual journey, and then summed it up with this particular walk. And when she walked out of the labyrinth, she kept that experience of writing that and having that dialogue, so to speak, with her mother, So when she walked out of the labyrinth, she just felt so much lighter, and that she had resolved some unfinished business with her mother.
Well, that was a pretty powerful experience, I guess.
That's probably the most dramatic experience that I've heard about. My particular experience is that it validates people's experience, their grief experience, and that's really the best from my point of view. That's really the best thing that it can do, is that it can validate somebody's experience of what they're going through and make it okay for whatever they're feeling, and that's like the best thing. Also, it gives them an opportunity, especially if they haven't been a writer, a journal writer, haven't kept a journal before, it gives them a way to start that. It gives them a way to focus that. A lot of people who haven't kept a journal feel a little bit intimidated about writing about themselves. And so by doing the journey and focusing on the labyrinth journey, it takes the pressure off of them writing about themselves. And so it gives them some distance and the ability to write about their journey. And then typically, once they've done that, then it kind of opens the floodgates and allows them a different way to look at their life and themselves and their experience.
And I would imagine also that their physical, I mean, I'm sure you must have gotten this from clients, that the physical benefits, you mentioned the balancing of the right and left brain, but that provides, when the brain is balanced, then the body slows down, the body sinks, the center of gravity sinks down to where it belongs, and they call it the Dantian, but it gives a sense of peace and I think roots the stomach. So you're not, you know, when you're, what's that term? You always hear, I had my, you know, it felt like a stone in my chest, or it felt,
yes,
like a knot in my stomach, or a knot in my, or I couldn't swallow for,
right,
because of the grief.
Exactly.
And this, so, you know, that must be also such a relief for people who, and unintended. I mean, they certainly don't realize that is going to happen when they start walking. But that feeling, that sense of peace and space that they have that they didn't have before, must be
absolutely
very beneficial. Have you ever had any not beneficial or negative reactions to
you? You know, the only negative reaction I've had is that somebody would say that they really didn't feel anything, you know, that they really didn't notice anything. But I've never had anybody have negative anything happen to them. The main thing is just when you're preparing people for a labyrinth walk of any kind, but especially grief, you just let them know that emotions will come up or could come up, and that, once again, emphasizing that whatever their experience is, that's their experience. And so it isn't something to be judged or evaluated against other people's. And so if they don't feel anything, that's fine too. But typically, especially working with people who have a lot of emotion, whether it be grief or anger or anything, typically I find that they do feel lighter when they leave the labyrinth. Just that sense of, like you said, of balancing the brain. That is one thing about that I do, why I do suggest that people do find a labyrinth to walk, is because that sense of walking also gives an outlet to that emotion, as well as giving them some really good physical, you know, things to do with their body. Ann Wilson Schaaf said, when we need these healing times, there's nothing better than a good long walk. It is amazing how the rhythmic movements of the feet and legs are so intimately attached to cobweb cleaners in the brain. And I just love that, cobweb cleaners in the brain. And so that's what I envision, even with a finger labyrinth, but that's what I envision the labyrinth having the ability to do, to help us clear out the cobwebs in our brain. And so that's, whether it was walking with your feet or with your finger, I think that's really the value of it.
And you mentioned that you really prefer or you love the short labyrinth design. What have you found, and have you had reactions by clients who possibly weren't able to walk a short labyrinth but found a Cretan labyrinth or whatever? And why do you prefer the short labyrinth design?
The short labyrinth, I think, it typically has more circuits, so it's a little bit bigger. The brain labyrinth, because of the design is different, it's not that the experience is really altered by that, but some people are so visual that for them, that particular design doesn't really speak to them from a aesthetic perspective. And so the shorts design is very welcoming, very beautiful. But in terms of experience, I don't think that there's really, as long as people go into it mindfully, the labyrinth walk itself, once you start walking, you don't really pay much attention to the design because you're just following the path. It's more of a aesthetic design, especially for giving somebody the finger labyrinth. The Schartz design, I think, is just really lends itself visually. It's just beautiful on a. I use heavy cardstock, and it's just really pretty on the page. But in terms of people's experience, it's more about the journey of walking a labyrinth rather than what the labyrinth itself looks like.
And you're creating a website with the same title as your book, or about the same title of the Transcending Grief, A Healing Journey into the Labyrinth of Loss.
Yes.
What is your website title? What is
the
URL?
The actual website is transcendinggrief.com, and it is the whole word. So it's TRANSCENDING, and then grief, GRIEF.com, and it's all one word. There's no spaces. And I can be reached at Adrienne, which is ADRIENNE, at transcendinggrief.com. My hope is at some point to be able to get people to share their experiences, to have a blog, to be able to order the workbook that I have put together. One of the things, Christiana, that in talking about people's experience of not knowing what to do for people, I have some really practical tips for coping with grief, either your own or other people's. And that's one of the things I mentioned earlier about not being able to chew and swallowing, and so soup and drinking fluids. But I also have other things in there, some very practical tips of helping people cope. One of the things of trying to get up and decide what to wear for work in the morning is one of those overwhelming things when you're tending to your grieving. And so having somebody come over and help you lay out like a week's worth of clothes and your accessories and your shoes, so in the morning that's not something you have to think about. So there's some really practical tips in the workbook, as well as there's some exercises to do in terms of grieving and walking the labyrinth itself. So that's another thing that I'm gonna, as I put this together, is being able to order the workbook online.
Great. Well, we have a caller waiting, so I have one more question. I have one more question for you, but I think that this question, you have answered it to a great deal. But, you know, of course, everybody's listening is thinking about the situation in Haiti and what that's brought up for everybody. And I think especially people here in this country, because the only thing that's needed now is very highly qualified people down there to tend to the people who are sick and ill and need medical attention, and then the people who are getting the food to those people. And so I'm sure there's a feeling of frustration, like, what can I do? How can I make a difference besides just sending a check?
Absolutely.
And the empathetic sadness and compassion for the suffering there. Do you have any suggestion besides walking labyrinths, which is for people in this country who are dealing with this in the pictures? And
well, I think that walking the labyrinth with the intention of sending that healing energy, I really firmly believe that thoughts are energy, and that energy really does, it's all around us. And so offering up your meditation, if you whatever your spiritual practice is, if it includes any kind of meditation or what prayers, offering that, because I do believe that does have a tangible effect. It is felt in the universe, sending blessings and compassion. And so dedicating a labyrinth walk to the people of Haiti, I think that is a very real thing that people can do and that it does have benefit.
Great. Okay, let's get. I've got two more callers, now. So let's get this ball rolling.
Okay,
here and
perfect.
Get them on.
Thank you.
I'm going to take the first one now. Welcome to Labyrinth in the News. This is Christiana. Who am I speaking to?
This is Nancy Kloss calling. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yes, just fine.
Oh, great. Okay, I didn't know I was number one caller. Hi, Adrienne.
Hi, Nancy.
Sounds wonderful. Read through your workbook again in this last week between interviews, and I really appreciate the practical nature of the advice you have in that book. I recommended it to a grief group that I attend over at Providence Hospital through hospice.
Oh.
And people were thrilled. They were really, really interested, and we've been meeting that group for a couple of years. I lost my brother to cancer 2 years ago. And many people have lost spouses, partners, children, everything. And I think you're right about the kinetic energy of the legs helping the mind, helping the heart out.
Mm-hmm.
And as an artist, I wanted to ask you a question about your writing. I'm wondering if you feel much further along in your own pathway as a result of having written this workbook.
I really do. That's a great question, Nancy. Thank you so much, and thank you for sharing it with other people.
Yeah.
I absolutely do feel that, because what happens when I write anyway is that I just put out stuff on the paper and I don't really know what's going to come out, and then from that I then started editing from what I had. And I actually had mentioned earlier that in 2002 I'd actually started another book. And so after I had written, gotten out my rough draft for this workbook, I found all that writing. And it was really interesting to go back and see where I was in 2002 versus where I was in 2009 when I was writing this. And the experiences that I've had that have just been even richer, and the people that I've met along the way that have validated so much of what I learned.
Yeah.
And so that's probably the biggest thing for me is that it really gives me a sense of having movement, of learning more. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I also wonder, are you writing now? Do you write every day? And are you going to write more as you go?
I don't write every day in terms of this. I do try to write personally every day in keeping a journal. I am going to, actually, I do want to update and kind of edit this. I did put this together for the gathering in October, and my timeline got a little crunched at the end, and so it didn't have the editing that I would have liked to have had. So before I republish it, I would like to go through, and there's some parts that I would like to expand. And getting feedback from people such as yourself who were willing to share a little bit more with me about, you know, the loss of your brother and people that I met at the gathering, that's one of the nice things about this is that it just continues to have a life of its own and expand.
Yeah.
And so I do envision doing it and putting out kind of a revised edition. I also really am looking at other ways to use the labyrinth. And so that's one of the things that I'm kind of mulling over and kind of chewing on since having been at the gathering and talked to so many different people from different ways that they're using it, of how else to use it other than just grief.
Well, the response...
I'm going to interrupt here just for a minute. I'm going to keep you on the line, Nancy. I'm going to bring the other person on because we only have a little bit left to go, and I want this other person's question answered. So here. Okay, let's see. Hi, welcome to Labyrinth in the News. Who am I talking to?
Hi, this is Carol Ann.
Hi,
Carol Ann.
Okay, you're on the air with Nancy Kloss and Adrian Vermeule. So what's your question?
And you. It's a girl party.
Yeah.
Well, Adrian, I really appreciate what you're presenting, and I've dealt with a lot of grief and loss in my own life and has found my way to the labyrinth and find it a tremendous healing tool. I would like to get some friends together and have a workshop, and I was wondering if you're available for that.
Absolutely. That would be something that I would love to do. And once again, you can contact me at, the best way would be to send an email to adrian@transcendinggrief.com. I would certainly love to do that. In addition to doing the labyrinth work itself, there's some other resources out there that, in terms of books and articles, and that I really do like to share with people to once again validate their experience of what they're going through. So I would love to do that. Thank you.
And then if I email you, do you have an email list so that I can be notified when you're doing workshops, when you're presenting programs in the area?
Yes, and that's part of this whole thing of trying to get the website together and all of that, of keeping that posted up there, and so that, like I said, people can contact me, starting kind of a forum, a discussion forum, so people can connect with each other. So that's in the future. That's hopefully.
But meanwhile, if I send you my email address, will you just let me know?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then another thing, I was wondering, I have gone through a lot of loss recently, and I have a lot of resources, but I'm wondering how I would connect with you to have you, you know, be an individual counselor for me.
Well, the best way is...
Since you understand a lot of the same spiritual practices that I do, I feel like might be a good connection. So do I just email you about that?
Yes.
Are you available for that?
Yes. Please email me, and I'll contact you, and we can set something up.
Good, because I really appreciate the host of this. A friend told me this was going to be happening, and I really appreciate the host for getting this information out there, and also for making it possible for me to hear you.
Well,
and
thank you.
I look forward to connecting with you offline.
Okay.
And thank you for the work you've done and for surviving grief and choosing to thrive.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Carol Ann. Thanks.
You're welcome. I'll email you.
Okay, thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
Bye.
Bye.
Nancy, do you have anything else that you'd like to say at this time?
Well, it's interesting. She actually asked a similar question to my own, which was at the end of sharing this book in this group, it had been a very intense meeting, and we were all exhausted. and it was a real, you know, it was like, here's something tangible. Here's an image that works, you know, that helps. And I wished I could have just unrolled a labyrinth right then and there that we could have walked on.
Yes.
And so I also would be very interested. So let me know if you set something up in the Portland area or nearby, and I will be sure to let others in this group know.
Oh, I definitely will, and that might be something that I can talk to the Labyrinth Society about is maybe
mm-hmm.
doing one specifically around grief, one of
right.
their walks,
right.
and being a part of that, because I
yeah.
do think that it's very important to give people a chance to do that. And the other thing that is amazing, and Christiana, you asked about this earlier, about people's reactions, the other thing that I've learned is that people often are surprised by the feelings that they thought that they had resolved that get
yeah.
triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I focus on in the workbook and when I talk to people is that sense of there's nothing wrong with them that this grief comes up again. It's usually that they're going deeper and that
mm-hmm.
they're looking at it from a different perspective, like the woman with her mother. There's a different way to kind of resolve that relationship, that unfinished business. And so it's a matter of, just like the labyrinth, of every time you walk it, you have a different experience. Well, it's not that you're going down the same road necessarily of grief. It's that you're having a new understanding about what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an idea just to leave you with. I have taught art as therapy, drawing, painting, design, and I'm starting to develop an interest in that as well from this group. So there might be something there to work with in tandem, you know, with presentation, facilitation, and also a chance to journal visually to help.
Yes, I would love that, Nancy. So yeah. I will definitely be in touch, and if something comes up that you learn about, I would love to be a part of it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Great. Great. Thank
okay,
you.
Great, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, thank you, Nancy, for calling. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's great.
Thanks.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Adrienne, the other thing is we're actually, the show is on but not streaming, so we're still being recorded.
Okay.
What the other thing I wanted to mention was that you do, this is for people who are going to go and listen to it archived, you do put your information, you're a member of Labyrinth Network Northwest, LNN organization?
Yes, I am.
Right,
as a matter of fact, I am a member of that organization.
Okay, so the other thing to do is to check their website, because if you put your calendar listings up and let people know that way, that's also a good way to find out about what you're doing, where you're going to be doing workshops, et cetera.
Right, and actually Labyrinth Networks Northwest, we're having an event. We're going to actually have a labyrinth walk over on Bainbridge Island right off the island off Seattle, and we're doing that on April 24th, so I'll be a part of that. I won't be leading a workshop, but I will be there, so if somebody wanted to connect at that particular event and have a chance to talk with me, I will be there for that on that day.
Great, and I think there's also now in existence a Seattle Labyrinth group organization.
That is actually the group that I'm working with. We're the Western Washington Labyrinth Network, and so we are the group that is putting that event on April 24th at the Grace Cathedral Episcopal Church over on Bainbridge Island. And
So this information might be good for that person who just hung up before, who wants to work with you individually, larger support group.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I think this could have been easily an hour show with no problem. But it is my intention to enlighten Labyrinth neophytes and support Labyrinth veterans with guests like you, who provided depth of information and personal experience not available through other sources. So many, many blessings on your path. It was great to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for inviting me on your show, and thank you for providing this service. As Carol Ann said, it's very important, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing. So thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome, Adrienne. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the Life category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana. Please join me February 22nd when my guest will be Russell Hill, a videographer who has filmed Labyrinth events and was the tech guru for the 2009 TLS gathering last October. Join us as we discuss the challenges of providing light, sound, and support for multi-day Labyrinth events. And please check my website and my BTR page for new guests added. Have a blessed week. In Lakesh.